Welcome to the Backstep, where we talk about safety, survival, and other things. Welcome to the Backstep.
Oh, good evening, everybody. This is Ronnie Kay in good old New York. New York, place so nice to name it twice. And with any luck and technology, my partner Tommy Arnhammer is on the other line from New Mexico. Tommy, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you could be louder.
Let me see what magic I can do here.
All right. And while Tommy's trying to figure it out, welcome. I don't think we've been on the Backstep in a little bit. A lot going on in our personal and professional lives like everybody else. And as for me, I am officially the Man of Steel. I was just walking by the hospital for special surgery about 5 weeks ago. Two surgeons came out, strapped me down with a gurney, brought me in, and put a piece of titanium in my back. Imagine that. What nerve. But something I needed to do. Unfortunately, my second spine operation in 18 months, but hopefully this will be the second time's the charm. So feeling pretty good, actually. It was five and a half weeks ago, and thank goodness things are starting to level out a little bit. So, all right, Tom, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're pretty good now. Not too bad.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, actually, it's the first time I'm going by cell rather than a house phone. I'm set up in a different area of the house and using the laptop and the cell phone, and hopefully it won't be too noisy and too bad on the background. What's cooking out in New Mexico, man?
Winter's slowly showing its ugly face. It's been cloudy, even though it's been kind of warm, but they're talking about snow Friday. So keeping my fingers crossed, see what's going on, and we'll take it from there. I got to tell you, I was talking with Peter this morning, our tech guy, and finally got stuff up to where I could get it loaded onto my social media. But he's like, what are you and Ron going to talk about? I said, look at it this way. I said, it's our last show of 2020. I want to reminisce about what a lovely year we've had.
Yeah, I think we should do that. Let's talk. All right. Let's take the next 10 seconds and talk about how great the year was. You ready, Tom? Don't say a word.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. That was all the good highlights of 20. What else would you like to hear?
I'd actually stuck a note up on Facebook that I had heard the other day that if 2020 was a drink, it'd be your stuff you guzzled down before your colonoscopy.
Yeah, and I had heard if 2020 was an ice cream, it would be liver and onions.
But yeah. I made a couple notes here just to talk about some of the more lovely things that we've had to deal with this year. And,
go ahead, man.
The first one that came up, obviously, is the COVID pandemic. And I'm not going to go into some of the political bullshit that comes along with whichever side of the fence you're on, because I really don't care. I do care that it is.
I said I really don't care about the fence. Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I got you now.
Okay.
But I got looking, and I went back in, and I looked at the 78 line of duty deaths we've had in 2020. And out of that 78, 21 of those are COVID line of duty deaths. So if we take the COVID line of duty deaths out of the equation, we're dealing with about 57 line of duty deaths. And of course, this is going off the U.S. Fire Administration statistics, which, you know, sometimes them, NFPA, and some of the other folks that track that stuff don't, the numbers don't always mesh. But I'm thinking 57 line of duty deaths, if you take the COVID out of the equation, isn't a bad number. Well, it's a bad number, but it's getting better.
Right. It's right. Cause that we had, I think in 18, it was 58, actually, if I'm not mistaken. We had we would consider it a banner year. It's hard to talk about, you know, having a good year with 58 of our firefighters going out of the house and not coming back, you know, but we don't want to mistake that conversation we're having now on the radio with our firefighter friends, that it was a good year because we only lost 58 of, you know, and what we say that because Tommy and I have been around longer than 15 minutes. And we remember when hotline line of duties were traditionally 120, 125, 110, you know, on and on and on. So overall, when we have a 57 year, the only thing that worries me, and for those of you listening, pass it on around the firehouse, is that December is traditionally a horrible month for the fire service. December is a terrible month. If you go back and look at the line of duties over the last 25 years, and December is a horrible, terrible month. So take that statistic back to the firehouse and say, listen, let's break that cycle. Let's break that December cycle and bring everybody home if we can, you know. So it's interesting, yeah, at 57. Just so you kind of segue into the next thing here, Tom. As most of you know, on the radio listening, Tom and I are intimately involved with the National Memorial Weekend in Emmitsburg every year. I'm the incident commander. Tommy's our operations chief. And we're preparing for this coming up for next October 2021, where we're going to have a double year ceremony live at the campus honoring the 2019 line of duties and the 2020s. We had a meeting the other day. We of course a Zoom meeting. We Zoomed together. And what we're talking about is possibly a roster of 250 names, which sounds like crazy off the wall. But 2019, I think with, when I say 106 in 2019, that's actual line of duties plus a stack of cancer deaths from FDNY and also other states that are recognizing cancer as a line of duty. There are 38 states that have that legislation. If the state recognizes the death as a line of duty, then so will the foundation. And then there are 54 firefighters that are pending total, 54 firefighters that are pending COVID. So so from 2019 into 2020 with COVID and cancers and everything else, we're planning for a 250 line of duty fire of personnel weekend, which for us, for the staff and for the people who come to help with that weekend and put it on to try to make it as flawless as possible, that's a heavy lift. We have to think out of the box in terms of transportation. You have twice as many families flying into airports, twice as many buses to move them around the Gettysburg, Frederick County area. Where and how do we feed them? We're working on all of those logistics. We've been working on this since March. In March, Ron Sarnicky, the executive director, he called me and he said, look, we're not getting to Emmitsburg this October. Ain't going to happen. And I told him he was crazy, of course. I said, nah, this will be over in a week. You know, forever the optimist. Yeah. And so, but sure enough, Ronnie had some insight. And so we've been talking about this since March. And then finally, the board of directors met from the former firefighters and because we offered them suggestions on maybe we would go off the campus to different venues, have a little more room. And they said, no, we want to be on the campus at the memorial. The thing about leaving the campus for the board, for Ron Sarnicky, and even for us, those of us who have been involved for so long, is you have to have it without the monument. You know, back in 2002, when we had the massive ceremonies because of 9/11 and all that stuff, and all the regular the line of duties that came in from around the country. We went to Washington D.C. We hired a company to build a replica of the monument, and it was a true replica. And Tommy, I'll never forget what you said to me when you walked into the MCI arena where the Washington Wizards play. You looked up on stage and said to me, "Do those folks at FEMA know that thing's missing?"
it still amazes me.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this was a professional studio, that does like the inaugural stages and they do Hollywood props, and they had like a 25-foot cowboy boot. We went to their warehouse to see them, to talk to them. And they went, they took 1,000 pictures of the damn thing and built it perfectly to scale. Even some of the stones that had a crack in them, the crack was there. Of course, it was made of plastic and paper mache, but so we kind of moved the replica of the monument to Washington that year. But at the end of the day, when we go off the site now, we're not at the monument. So the board of directors asked us to get out of the box, do whatever we can to get back on campus and have that double year ceremony. So next October, 11 short months from now, we'll be on the campus doing a 2-year, so what I call the heavy lift. But we have the right people in the right spot to help get with that lift and give those families. That was the thing that made me personally sad this year was we'd had a video tribute. Some of you may have seen it, but we didn't get a chance. We didn't get that opportunity we get every year to give the families a little bit of closure. And that the 2019s couldn't get it, and the 2020s, they have to wait till next year. Of course, they'd have to wait anyway. But it'll be a long stretch for the 2019 families where we can bring them together on that weekend, have those unbelievable dignified and give them a little bit of closure. So we're planning for 250 honorees, and then you multiply that with, you know, average of, you know, 4 to 6 family members, blah, blah, blah. So that's the work we're doing now to honor the fallen. So what else is on your magic list for the year, Tom?
No, I just wanted to mention to you, and I think you're well aware of it, but if you wanted to see the replica of the Fallen Firefighter Memorial, it's actually at the D.C. Fire Museum up on the third floor of Engine Company 3 down by the Capitol. And it sits taking up space in the corner there. But it amazes me every time I walk into the museum that thing looks like it got stolen from Emmitsburg. It is so lifelike. It's amazing.
I'll never, Tommy, like it happened yesterday, and it was 18 years ago. We walked into that arena, and you looked at me and said, "Do they know it's missing?" I mean, just like that. I'll never forget your face, how you said it. So that stays with me. But yeah, we managed to see. It cost a lot of money to make that replica, by the way, folks. And it cost a lot of money to store. We were storing it. Actually, that ceremony was in, let me see. That was in October of 2002.
Would have been 2002, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was October of 2002. And then it was created and stored and then shipped to FDIC in 2003. And we had it on display out there in the convention center for a couple of days. But the cost of creating it, shipping it, and storing it was just off the wall. So they started looking for a place. They offered it to the Smithsonian. They turned it down and to a half a dozen other places. But thank goodness it's still – I thought it was destroyed until I think just about a year ago. I was talking to somebody, probably Ronnie, and I said, gee, that's too bad that they got rid of that statue. And he goes, no, it's still around. And I forgot where he told me it ended up. But because I know you have a lot of D.C. fire savvy, you would certainly know that it landed in D.C. In the fire museum, which is kind of cool. So
if it'll ever open back up again, I know everything here in New Mexico has been locked down again because of the recent upsurge in COVID cases. What's going on in your part of the planet with that, Ron?
They closed the New York City school system I believe it was, today is Monday, I believe it was last Tuesday or Wednesday. Now, while that sounds a little bit ominous for folks who don't know, there's 1.2 million children in the New York City school system in the five boroughs of New York. And then now you close that system down, and all the parents that are trying to get back to work or have gotten back to work or are working from home, they're being double charged with working from home and with trying to get the kids to do their schoolwork and all that stuff. It's or people who need to go into office, or if they're working in a hands-on type mechanical job, it sets you back on your butt because of what do we do with the kids now? And so the ironic thing is, and the doctors saying that the best place for the kids to be is in school. There's even in New York City, there's no COVID rate in the school system. They're taking all precautions, and the kids are isolated and masked up, and they make them wash their hands every 14 minutes and all that shit. So it's kind of crazy what's going on. But there's a surge here again. Not quite as bad as it was originally, but it's surging everywhere. And the governor of New York and the mayor are talking about going back, you know, to completely shutting down the restaurants versus 25% versus 50% and all that stuff. And you know what? It's not coming from the restaurants either. The restaurant owners, I mean, God bless them. They're taking every precaution. People have just – they talked about this on the other day on the news, and they called it pandemic fatigue. You know, and I think that was a perfect word. People are just tired of it. So there are parties breaking out, whether it's near or on a college campus, there are parties breaking out. They just showed footage of a wedding. They actually just put a lock on the door and fined the owner of a catering hall, I think in Connecticut, for sneaking a 150-person wedding in a few weekends ago. There's a couple of neighborhoods in Brooklyn they had this footage of a wedding with a lot of people. Nobody's even wearing a mask. So these big get-togethers is what's doing it. Because people have what they call a pandemic fatigue. So it's here we go again. The only thing that's the only bright star and the only silver lining here is there are three vaccines on the horizon that have been tested and proven already, which appears they are, and now they're under review by the FDA, and hopefully we'll start to vaccinate enough people around the United States where we'll be able to get that herd immunity. You know, Tommy, I've been teaching graduate emergency management for the University of New Haven for about 11 years. And the class I teach is catastrophe readiness and response. And we spend time. I mean, the last 11 years, we've talked about herd immunity. We talked about the pandemic in 1918. We talked about social distancing, all the terms that everybody's sick of hearing now. I've been lecturing on that stuff for about 11 years at the college. And when this all happened, I looked at my wife, I said, this is nothing new for me. I mean, the pandemic is, of course, new for me. I wasn't around in 1918, although most people think I was. But the concepts and all the stuff, I've been studying this stuff for a long time and teaching it. So, but it's people are tired, and I get that. But now's not the time to drop your guard. I mean, you can't. And they were firemen getting sick everywhere. The guys in the firehouse are doing the same thing. Look how many firefighters we lost to COVID. I spoke to a former captain of mine from my last command. He's home. I have a cousin who had it. So, you know, the people, what our firefighters and medics and all the allied services that we work with have to realize that the country is dependent on us right now. You know, the doctors and nurses, of course, but we're going to be the first ones in the door when something happens, whether it's putting them on an ambulance or whatever. So we have to stay healthy ourselves. We have to get through it. And we're close. We're so damn close. It's like running that marathon. And you could see the banner, and you're two blocks away, and your legs start giving out on you, and you say, "The hell with it!" But it can't be that way. We have to do better.
Tired about the pandemic, we can go on to the next happy subject, which is civil unrest. And you know, Ron, I know you can remember back to some of the rioting that had taken place in various large cities back in the 70s. I think back to the Newark riots in the 60s, and I would have thought that some of that would have been over, but this year, between everybody not being happy with the police and government and all that other stuff, has caused kind of a resurgence of us having to go back and dust off the SOPs and policies on how to deal with civil unrest from our standpoint. And I think it's a new paradigm for some of the newer folks coming on the job.
I don't disagree with you. I just started getting interested in the fire thing in the very early 70s, like 70, 71. But in the local firehouse in Brooklyn where I grew up, when I started to hang around there, I was a kid. But they had an open top tiller rig and a homemade roof was applied to that because stuff was flying off the rooftops and people were throwing stuff at our guys, you know. So it was a rough time, the 60s, the Columbia riots and everything that was going on in the 60s and protests in the Vietnam War and all of that stuff. The country was at unrest. It doesn't seem it's quite as bad as it is now because I think, frankly, what contributed to what happened in the last 6 months last 8 months in the United States was because the COVID, everybody was home and had nothing to do. You know, that's what I look at it.
Yeah.
Everybody was bored, locked in the house and said, oh, this is a chance to get out. I think I'll go protest for a while. And then some of those nice people got caught up in all the baloney with these guys. They called in the out-of-towners who came just to burn stuff and just to rile people up because there's some sort of a cause, an underlying cause there, you know, without getting into the politics of it and whatever the cause is. But violence and fire and arson and all that stuff just doesn't sit well with most just normal people, you know, just saying well, that doesn't prove anything. It just proves, you know, you're a criminal or a thug, you know. You're not going to make your point, you know.
Well, you know, and I can understand the peaceful protest thing. I mean, that's being an American. But
absolutely.
There's nothing out there that gives you the right to set fires to other people's businesses because you're pissed off about something.
Yeah, and you know what? What you speak because the most folks on this radio broadcast, they don't know who you are, Tommy. And let me tell you, folks, Tom Ernhammer is a nationally known fire and arson guy, investigator, teacher of the subject at the National Fire Academy and beyond. And I agree with you, man. I know you're an authority on it. And God, you've given me so much homework over the last years. I'm going to punch you in the nose next time I see you. You've given me books to read every time we talk. Hey, did you read this book? Hey, did you read that book? And by the way, I'm passing all those books on to my audiences now. I taught two classes
very
online
good.
This week at New Jersey. I told them to get the book on sweat and the book on Burn Boston Burn. Those are two of my latest favorites, you know.
In fact, I just got done rereading Burn Boston Burn. And,
you read it again?
For those,
really?
Yeah, it's the whole thing's so surreal. It just amazes me. And if you haven't read it, pick it up and read it, man. It is. It's a fascinating read, one of the biggest serial arson cases in the United States, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and the thing is, it is a little surreal because as you read it, it almost after a while, it seems like a novel, like James Patterson wrote the damn thing, you know, but it wasn't. And just to whet the appetite of the audience, this was took place in the 80s in Boston. And it started out as a very innocent group of fire buffs driving around taking pictures of fires. And we'll leave it there and get the book and read it because it'll like make you scratch your head. But Tom gives me a lot of homework, folks. You know, and I'm getting sick of it. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, but I love you, brother. Don't worry about it. It's all good. You know.
Okay. But if you want to smack me around a little bit, I'm all right with it.
That's all right. But going back to what you said about, you know, not having the right to burn people's stuff. I mean, at the very end of the day, every state has arson statutes, and willfully burning the property of another, that's like right from the Constitution, you know, and all that stuff. So, those folks they're committing, you know, crimes and felonies and all kinds of stuff, and then law enforcement got handcuffed in some of these big cities, and it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. None of our people got hurt.
I'll use the example of Portland, which some of the shit that they've done is just absolutely unbelievable. They pretty much surrendered part of the city to protesters. What are you, out of your fucking mind? They actually sent out a letter to folks. It was covered in the press back in July, putting out a statement that federal police and local police are not allowed to use the fire stations. You know, how many years, Ron, have we been in our houses and opened our doors to our brothers in blue to give them a bathroom, to give them a cup of coffee, to give them a warm place to take a dump? And now, because all these idiots are protesting in one of the stupidest cities in the United States, they're going to say, sorry, you guys can't come in the firehouse anymore.
Yeah, it's, you know, the firehouse is open every day of the week for the cops and medics and whoever else wanted to come in, let alone, you know, our citizens. And I can't imagine ever locking them out if
yeah.
they wanted to come to us for whatever reason. You know, I mean, my last command, they realized we had a nicer kitchen than they did in the police station. So they go, they'd be out patrol. They'd pick up their lunch and they'd come in and sit down at our table and have lunch. And the guys would sit around and talk with, you know, I mean, shit, why not? Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, but and look what that in Seattle, you know, the mayor said, oh, it'll be the summer of love. So she gave him six blocks.
Yeah.
And some guy who wanted to be God pulled in with an AR-15 or whatever. And he became the lord of the six blocks. You know, and then there was a shooting and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's pretty bizarre. I mean, you know, I just that kind of behavior, you know, again,
I feel bad for the brothers in those cities just because of the bullshit that they got to put up with because of some political rhetoric. It's wrong. I could get up on my soapbox and scream about this for the rest of the show, but we've got plenty of other fun 2020 stuff to talk about.
Well, you couldn't get up on your soapbox. I know you lost a bunch of weight recently, but you'd probably crush it, go through it, and fall on your ass. So forget about getting up on your soapbox, okay? That ain't gonna happen. But I heard today, I was on a Zoom call today with the fire programs gang from the former firefighters. You know, Ricky Best and John Tippett and the gang, and Rick said they're having an exodus of career firefighters in Ohio right now.
Really?
In the Bages, Cincinnati, Cleveland, where they have an unrest every night, and the guys are going out, and it's they've had a bunch of close calls, and finally, a whole bunch of them said, I didn't sign up for this. This is not why I became a firefighter. And he made a good point. He says, you know, today firefighters have a lot of options, man, because, you know, 90% of them are coming to the firehouse with either a bachelor's or a master's in something else, not in fire, you know, accounting or law, you know, but they want to be a fireman. Okay. But now it's like, I didn't sign up for this shit. I'm out there every night. They're burning stores. They're throwing shit at us. There's gunfire. I'm out. So he said that there's a pretty good percentage. No, not 50% or 25%, but he says a bunch of career people have walked away in the recent months. And I wonder what's going on in Portland and in Seattle and Minneapolis and some of these other cities that have been under siege. I can't imagine it might not be the same. You know, I can imagine it might be the same. So, I don't know. It's terrible to hear that. You know, you hate to hear guys walking away because of the conditions, but you almost can't blame them. You know, because we didn't sign up for that. You know, and then we get caught in between that. The problem with us is you know, firefighters are can-do people. We don't walk away from shit. You know, it's like bring it on. But now, you know, we talked about active shooter and that stuff, and it's like, all right, well, let's give our people helmets and ballistic vests. And the firefighters say, yeah, give us the equipment. We'll train with the cops. We're good. And then after a while, somebody says, wait a minute. What the hell are we doing? We're wearing vests underneath our burnout coats, and we're wearing – wait a minute. You know, so it's this is a strange time. It's just a strange time. I don't know how else to put it, but go ahead. What else is on your list of a fantastic year here in 2020?
Wildland fires.
Oh, wildland fires. Yeah, we had a couple, right?
The good news, I think, is that the mudslides have put most of the fires. Ron, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, I was actually on the phone on that conference call today with the legendary Tom Harbor, the recently retired chief of the U.S. Forest Service. And Tom's in our group. He's helping us do some training with the wildland guys. And he said something to the effect that there's, I forgot what the name of the fire is, but and it might be Colorado. They've had significant snowfalls in the area.
Yeah.
And the fire won't go out still. I mean, significant snowfalls.
No.
And they can't get the fire out. So the beat goes on. I mean, you know, it continues. So not good. I asked when is the wildland fire season over? And because we want to do some training programs with the Wildland Fire Service through the fallen firefighters. And it's like a 2-month window. It's like January and February. And then in March, they start to gather up again and start to have meetings and start to have retrainings and recruiting more people because they're getting ready for the spring. So it's like we got this real short window before these guys go back and start doing it again. You know, I hope we learn something from this wildfire season. There's got to be something I know even the president got involved. You know, he sounded like he knew what he talked about the wildland, but, you know, he's being given information by others because he said, we haven't cleaned the forests out in 10 or 15 or 20 years. It's all dry. It's laying there like a box of matches because we don't do the forest cleaning. We haven't done that in probably 20 or 25 years. We don't clean out, and all the dry shit's laying there, man. So that's all I know about wildland. I never profess to be an expert. Thank God there are guys
Tom
and guys like you. I know you're also a wildland guy. So
one of the big problems is, and it was happening up at the. Of course, I love it when they name the fires something interesting, and the one where I think it was outside of. Grand Lake, Colorado, was the troublesome fire, and it certainly proved to live up to its name. But there's been a tremendous amount of trees killed by the Japanese bark beetle, and it's like a vertical lumber yard in parts of the state. And once that stuff gets going, there's really no stopping it. So. We certainly didn't want the people on the East Coast to feel left out because of the wildland fires. So we decided to get involved in hurricane season. And, Ron, I know some of the stuff traveled up the Atlantic coast, but it looked like it was a pretty active weather season for the firefighters out there as well.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's the old thing. It's fire and water. Fire on the left side, water on the right. You look at the map of the country. So we've had, in the realm of 2020, being as fucked up as it could be, that's part of it. You know, basically, hurricanes and firestorms and water storms and fire hurricanes and all that other shit. They're all interchangeable, it sounds like. But Tom said something interesting today. He said, you know, he's retired, but he either volunteers or he gets activated by contract or something. But, you know, he was on the ground again in the last couple of months out west. And he said, interestingly enough, he says the guys from the East Coast that had the wildland certification, that they were flying out to the West Coast to help. He says, and they come in the first day and they're talking about, you know, road trip, you know. We had great times. Some of them might have drove out, you know, maybe from the Midwest or, toward here. And road trip, and we stopped, and we had this, and we're having fun. He says, and then they got a dose of reality. They got a dose of reality, and some of them were there when we had what they have. How many line of duty deaths they have in a wildland this year, Tom? During this bad season, had three or four, right?
No, yeah, easily between the aircraft incidents and some on the ground LODDs.
He said so. The East Coast boys got a rude awakening when they got into that forest. He says and things were changing rapidly, and then there was a line of duty. He said so. He said, I guess we still don't impress upon our people around the United States how tough this could be and how bad it can be. I believe him. I believe him. I don't have to go there to see it. I believe Tom Harbor. He's a believable guy, you know. Oh, man.
Well, I'm glad to see the foundation starting to do some stuff in the Wildland Arena. And you know where my heart lies with some of the wooey stuff, to make sure we're not getting guys that are typically structural firefighters hurt by doing something that doesn't really follow the strategy and tactics of dealing with the wildland problem.
Yep. Well, before I got into the training and education position I'm in now with them, they started something last year, but it's good. They put a group together, and they've taken a lot of the programs, and we've modified our existing programs. Just everyone goes home. Courage to be safe, LAC, LEGH, leadership, so everyone goes on all those programs, and we put a wildland twist on it, and just before COVID, and I got in the door in January with the T&E position, but January, February, just a little bit into March, we did two or three programs. I didn't do them, but the Rick Best and his team, they went out to Utah, Idaho, and maybe Montana. They went out west, and they rolled up. We called it the Wildland Rollout. So we started rolling out a lot of safety stuff in the beginning of this calendar year for those guys, and got a big reception. And then recently, we just talked about trying to get back to them. That's why they said they got a very, very short window where we get back and do some online webinars for them, rolling out some more programs and stuff. So the foundation's take a big interest in assisting wildland firefighters with safety and wellness and health and all that good stuff. So yeah, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. We're spreading it out a little bit more, so it's working out pretty well. You know.
So I'm still waiting for the killer hornets to show up. Did they ever make their way in?
Well, I thought I saw some, and this is, I'm not making this up. All summer into the fall, and then, you know, basically where we are now, we're in November. I did a lot of walking with my back injury. The doctor said walk a lot, and then it led up to my October 8th surgery for the steel. But all summer, I used there's a huge parking lot here in the condo complex I live in, big parking lot, where the clubhouse is and the tennis courts and all that. So I drive down there in the morning, and I walk for about 45 minutes, 50 minutes, and it would come out to somewhere between 2 and 3 miles, depending on my pace. And I'm walking around, and there's this little garden area, like in the middle, and there's a lot of activity, and they're flying low to the grass, and they look like yellow jackets, but they look like, you know, like 3-inch, 4-inch yellow jackets. I said, what the hell? And it was right around the time they said that these guys might be coming over here to check it out. And I wasn't sure. I'd pass them. They wouldn't come after. They wouldn't bother you. They were busy just zipping around the grass. And that they probably had a nest. I think they burrowed themselves in the ground like a mud wasp. And
wow.
one of my walks, there's two of them on a regular a wasp or another bee, and they're taking it apart. Now they said that those killer bees attacked other bees, wasps and whatever else. I saw it with my own eyes. I said, boy, that's them's. So I saw the grounds guys, and I said, hey, listen, take a ride over to that spot over there and tell me what you think you see. They said, all right. They said, I said, and you have stuff? Yeah, have it in your hand already when you go over there.
Yeah.
But sure enough, I saw two of them take down a regular wasp and take it apart. So I think we might have had, and then within a week or two, we had a massive storm with like 60-mile-an-hour winds, and that took them somewhere else. They might be out by you now. They might have took them from here out to New Mexico. They might be right in the backyard. So they were gone. The storm picked them up and just took them away. So, but I think I saw
been,
it.
I've been waiting for them to show up. The two wasps, Vinny and Guido, and wearing their sunglasses and saying, "Hey, forget about it. You keep moving. Don't look at nothing."
Yeah, right. But basically, if you walk by the nest and you hear them and they're talking like me, then you know that they were from here, from Westchester, New York, right?
Yeah.
Those must be Ron's guys.
Yeah.
Yo, keep moving or we'll sting you in your ass, you big mustache dope, you know, and that kind of stuff. So,
yes.
What can I tell you?
So you might be interested in knowing this fact.
What's that?
I have declared myself the president-elect of the United States.
How come?
I figured, well, if the other guy's going to do it, I can do it too.
But at least, you know, I from what I saw in the news, he got like 78 million votes. I'm thinking you probably got two or three.
Yes. Yeah, if that.
I know I voted for you, and I'm thinking your wife, that's questionable. She may or may not have.
The five other dead guys that voted for me, I thought that would help.
Oh, okay. That works for me. So if you're going to be the president, where are you putting me in the cabinet? What are you going to do for me?
In the liquor cabinet.
I'll go on. Okay, in the liquor cabinet. I like that. Okay. I'll be a cabinet member. That's pretty good. I like that. He's a cabinet member. He can't stand up too well, but he's a cabinet member. I love it. Oh, shit. I mean, yeah, what else could possibly... The year would be topped off if a fucking meteor hit the place on New Year's, you know? That would do it. That would do it. Holy shit.
I saw a meme on the internet the other day. It was a SWAT team that was getting ready to make entry into an apartment, and the caption said, "All right, we know you ordered a turkey that's going to feed 15 to 20 people. How many you got in there?"
You know, it's you bring that up, but I watch the news and cable news in the morning, and they've had police chiefs on, and said I'm not sending my men to anybody's house to count heads. I'm not doing it. You know, I don't care what's going on. That's not why we're here. You know, one chief got on. I had a chief from New Jersey on the other day, and he said I live in this town. I work in this town. I'm the police chief here. I grew up here. He said I shop here. I go to restaurants here. He says, "You think I'm going to send my men into my neighbor's houses to see how many people are in the house? No way. No chance." He says, "I don't care how many rules are coming from the governor. I'm not doing it." So a little more lunacy. We just add, that's just another check the box for the lunacy list for the year. That's all, you know, that kind of stuff. One of the best things that I saw was that there was, I'm not a Facebook guy, and I'm not a social media guy, but somebody forwarded something to me. I guess they snapped a picture of the screen. I guess you could do that. I have no idea, but it was the Jewish New Year is in September all the time. And some rabbi actually posted it, said, "I feel bad for you rest of you Americans." He said, "Our year just finished. You got four more months to go, you poor bastards." You know, look at everybody got in on the action. Everybody had something to say, you know. But yeah, we'll get through this, and it's just when you stop and think about a quarter million people dying from this thing, that's to me the hair on my neck go up, you know. Quarter million people.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy stuff. So, you know, with the help of the good Lord and the good Lord and the scientists, those are the two things I look at, you know, and I've been saying it all along, follow the science, man. As you know, Tommy, I worked for Merck. The guys that don't know, Merck Pharmaceutical, big pharmaceutical company in the world. I was their fire chief for 20 years in New Jersey. And it was always follow the science. When something happened or something got bad, follow the science. Let the science work itself out, and it'll prove itself out. So that's what I've been hanging my hat on that for 10 months or 9 months already, and the science will prove itself out. And today, some of the foreign countries, there's some sort of consortium of doctors and scientists and said the work that the pharmaceutical companies have done in the last 10 months or the last, well, yeah, 10 months, 9 months, they did 10 years worth of research in 9 months, these companies. And that's going to change. That's a game changer for vaccines, for other viruses and other influenza things going forward. So while they concentrated on what they did here, the research that was done going forward, we should be in much better shape should something similar to this pop up. You know, so it's just, you know, I follow the science, but I had faith the whole time. I told my wife, whoever would listen to me, I said, they'll find something. Don't worry. We got smart people in this country. I met when I worked at Merck, I was the resident dopey bastard. How about that? I walked around with a white helmet and a dunce cap on over the top of the helmet. You know, some of the smartest people in the world worked in that place, and that's who they recruit. And those are the people who figured out the formula for this vaccine. So thank God for them. Thank God for them. And hopefully we'll get some semblance of our life back in short order, a couple of months. You know, which is kind of encouraging for me.
I'm looking forward to 2021, and I think the vaccine on the horizon is certainly given some hope, and hopefully the political rhetoric will settle down, and that'll in turn settle down some of the civil unrest and some of the other things that are still occurring out there. I did see a couple of interesting pieces looking at Dave Statter's stuff and the Billy G's, and you know, we're still dealing with reputation management. We're still dealing with social media-assisted career suicide, as our good friend Dave Statter likes to talk about, bullies in the firehouse, some of the stupid stuff that we do and continue to do that, while it might not be directly related to all the crap that's been going on this year, I think it certainly still plays a piece in it. And Billy G had a deal up on the secret list here not too long ago on how is it in your firehouse? And it's actually a survey that I would highly encourage everybody to take. Ron, Dr. Sarah Jahnke's kind of heading up the study on what the survey is going to come out. And you've worked with her on some other stuff in the past, haven't you?
Not directly. But a lot of the
okay.
We kind of track the same circles at different times. But she's been a major player for firefighter health and safety. She's one of our stars. Her and Dr. Denise Smith out of upstate New York. So yeah, so with Sarah Jahnke's on the edge, man. Good.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the results are. And I mean, the culture has shifted. You know. And I know what it was like in the 70s coming in as a rookie. You knew what was coming. Hazing, harassment, all that kind of stuff. I don't think it was done maliciously. It was just part of what was done. And I think that maybe the culture shifted a little bit where it became malicious. And that's not right. And there was nobody who loved more than pranking guys at the firehouse than me and the guys that I worked with. But when it gets to the point where it's causing harm, there's been a couple suicides directly related to that type of behavior. And hopefully this will shed some more light on the issue and hopefully put an end to it.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Because they had, I think, was it 2 years ago in Fairfax, Virginia, they had a female firefighter take her own life. She was being harassed by a group of guys, whatever. And you know, we have a group of people very near and dear to us from Fairfax that come every year to Emmitsburg to help out on that Memorial Weekend. And one or two of them were really set back by that. and fellow female firefighters, and no names, but we know who they are. So, yeah, you know, when it gets to that point, then it's out of control, and somehow it's spun out of control in some place. So we need to keep an eye on that. Well, in a related story, I picked up two self-inflicted gun wounds in firehouses. One was in Charleston, West Virginia, where a firefighter came into the firehouse for work, I guess, and he was putting his firearm in his locker, got himself by accident. My thing is, why is he bringing a firearm into the firehouse to start with? So that's number one. And, you know, what I understand people have the right to carry and stuff, but you're going to work, you're going to the firehouse. You don't have to bring it to the firehouse. Unfortunately, in Indiana, a volunteer firefighter who was a former Marine and currently a corrections officer, he also went into the, I don't know if he was home or he went into the volunteer house, and his gun went off, quote, accidentally, killed him. So that investigation, there's still a lot to be looked at with that one. It remains to be seen. But guns in the firehouse, that's like guns and alcohol. Don't mix. Guns in the firehouse, don't mix. Not for me, anyway. And I guess in different parts of the country, I don't know. Maybe it's acceptable, but it kind of boggles me a little bit after all this time.
It's something that, you know, we've lived with out in the West, especially around hunting season. Guys would bring their rifles in to get them ready to go out for the hunt. I never considered that any different than maybe working on your car. Just because we were used to it, and there was always, firearm safety should have been paramount in some of those deals. But, I'm a gun guy. And thankfully, I live in part of the country where, I've got a concealed permit. But I also understand the danger of you not using them properly or, God forbid, if a kid gets a hold of one.
Right. Well, I am too. You know, I have my little cache of stuff, but I'm not sure. I guess it's regional, like you said. The guys sitting and cleaning their rifles in the firehouse to go hunting. I guess it all depends on where you live. I get it. Do you know the circumstances around the DC fireman who got shot recently?
I saw something. I noticed it mentioned that the rig got shot up. So I think they were responding to a shooting and got on scene, and then more shots ensued. But I don't know the particulars of exactly what was going on.
Gotcha. Okay. I thought you might have kind of heard about that. I got some notes. I'm just looking through some notes. What time? Oh, wow, we're almost done. Well, time flies when you have fun. No? let me see. Da-da-da-da-da. I know you're going to give the. Are you doing a line of duty list tonight, Tom? At the end?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, and I know you're going to mention him, but this really jumped off the screen. They had a really untimely death in an assistant chief in Oakland, California, 42-year-old guy.
Yeah, I saw that.
I got to imagine the shockwave that went through the Oakland Fire Department with that. What a horror scene that had to be. Young guy like that. But we don't know. You never know what goes on in someone's life, what kind of, predisposed medical conditions they might have had. Who the heck knows? But you hear about a 42-year-old guy like that in a firehouse, it makes you sit up and take notice. Okay, what else do we need to be doing here, to have a better chance of survival, and but we don't know the details, and we don't know if we'll ever know the details, but it just kind of makes you sit up and take a little bit of notice,
Hey, what we hadn't mentioned is our sponsor.
Oh, did we not mention our sponsor? I'm usually pretty good with that. Do you want to mention the sponsor?
Globe Fire PPE. Great company. I've been in Globe gear since I was 18 years old. And I'll be the first to admit I strayed for a couple of years because there was a small company in Colorado that was doing custom fit stuff. But when they pulled it up, we went back to Globe. And those guys up in Pittsfield, New Hampshire, where they are located, I've never been to the factory, but from what I understand, it's almost like a family-like atmosphere with a lot of the guys being volunteer firefighters in the area that are putting together some of the best PPE out there. And they are a proud sponsor of Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Yes, they are. And their website is globe.msasafety.com/Supraflex, S-U-P-R-A-F-L-E-X, Supraflex. So we thank Globe for sponsoring our show and other shows that are on the air, like they say. Thanks for remembering that, Tom, because without our sponsors, then you and I be talking to each other. Nobody could hear all the bullshit, you know. This way we can get it out. So it's about that time, Tom. So if you would call the roll and let's honor our fallen.
Last time we were on the air was October 12th of 2020. And since then, there's been 8 line of duty deaths. On October 16th, Lemuel Bruce from the Houston, Texas Fire Department was shot and killed. Mr. Bruce was a arson investigator with the Houston, Texas Fire Department and was on a stakeout when the suspect came out and a gun battle ensued, and he lost his life. On October 17th, Keith Williams from Camilla, Georgia, passed away from an unknown medical at the fire station. On November 2nd, Harold Boone from Forsyth, Georgia, a COVID-19 death. November 8th, Johnny Iveson Jr. from Easton, Kansas, lost his life in a vehicle crash. November 14th, Matthew Bennett from Indianapolis, Indiana, passed away from an unknown medical at a fire scene. November 16th, Sean Laffin from Oakland, California, that Ron had mentioned earlier, a heart attack at the station. On November 17th, Joseph Gallo from Blissfield, Michigan, passed away from injuries sustained in a vehicle crash. And November 18th, Michael Butendorp from Rothbury, Michigan. This one was, thankfully, no one else got hurt, but he had an unknown medical while he was driving a water tender to a fire scene. Thankfully, the guy that he was riding with managed to get the vehicle stopped, but the driver, Michael Butendorp, passed away from that. With that, we ask that you heed the lessons that were learned in these tragic events and make sure that the word gets passed to make our work environments much safer.
Thanks, Tom. Well said, as usual. And I think that's it tonight. I think we've been up on the back step about an hour. We will not be on the back step in December. We've been suspended for a month. I think it's because you got the F-bomb tonight, and I didn't. How about that shit? That's a first, I think. How long are we on? 7 years?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you must have been aggravated tonight because you dropped the F-bomb and I didn't. So that's because of scheduling, we actually have December off and we'll be back after the first. So with that, we wish you and all your families out there, your firefighters' families and personal families and everybody you know, happy holidays. So salvage what you can at Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah and whatever else you celebrate. It doesn't matter to us what you celebrate. If you're a firefighter, that's our religion, right, guys and gals? So celebrate and let's get this year behind us and look toward better days for 2021. And we're looking forward to physically getting back together. I'm looking forward to our family reunion in Indianapolis at FDIC in April. That's what I'm waiting for. It's been a long time for me. I missed 19 because of surgery. I missed 20 because we didn't have it. So I'm hurting for some FDIC, that's for sure. So with that, we'll say good night. Don't forget, stay well. Take care of yourselves. Wear your seatbelts. Be careful how you drive. You gotta arrive alive and hug your wife and kids tight when you say goodnight. So with that, I'm going to hit the button for some outro music. And, Tommy, have a great Thanksgiving. I'll talk to you in a couple of days, buddy. All right?
All right, brother. I'll talk to you soon. Stay safe.
I'll talk to you tomorrow. We have to get together, remember?
Yes.
All right, actually, I'll call you after the show. I got to ask you something. Good night, everybody.
Okay.